Thanks for listening to the Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
Now let's get this party started.
You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
He played 10 years in the NFL and is still playing. He's a free agent now. Six of the 10 years, he was voted a Pro Bowler with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, who now have a new quarterback and are doing well themselves. And Gerald McCoy, who was a Cowboy until he was injured, again, he is a free agent, is joining us live right now. They are the most talked about defense in the NFL. Troy Aikman said, listen, man, I would be embarrassed to have that stuff on film and go into the meetings this week and have players call, you know, it's embarrassing. So I watched it this week against Cleveland, and this was my criticism, Gerald. You knew Cleveland was going to run.
Right.
You knew that. And they kept getting the edge for 3 hours. Nick Chubb got hurt. They still got the edge. In your opinion, why didn't they adjust?
Well, I wouldn't say that they didn't adjust. I just think the adjustments didn't work. And to speak on what Troy Aikman said, he says it would be embarrassing to go into that meeting room and have to watch the film. I'm pretty sure they are embarrassed. You know, one of their own said that their play was soft. You know how hard it is as a grown man and professional what you do, to call what you just did, the performance you just had soft. You know, that takes a lot of ownership. So I'm pretty sure they're not sitting in the meeting room, you know, hyped about what they've been doing over the first four games, first 4 weeks. And but I believe in these guys. You know, they have a bunch of vets in the room on defense. And I believe they can turn around, but it's not going to be easy. I'm not saying it's just going to happen this week, but something's got to give, man. You know, the play that stood out to me the most was the Odell play. You know, you have a chance to go up, or you have a chance to get a stop to try and tie the game or even go up. And, you know, it's just Odell bent it back 15 yards, I think it was, something like that. You know, and it just – at that point when the game on the line, I'm sure they all know. And I'm sure they walked in the meeting room and said, our effort has to be better. That's not the effort we need when we're trying to get back in the game. And I'm not saying nothing that I'm pretty sure that they already are not saying to themselves, but it's just clear. You know, the effort just has to be better on that play. And these guys play hard, but that particular play just stood out as far as effort goes.
Yeah, no, that I think you saw and I saw it. You could just turn the TV on and see it. So Mike Nolan's the new defensive coordinator. People are saying his system is too complicated. Could that be it? You know it. You were there. Is it too complicated?
I wouldn't say that it's complicated. It's up front, you know, in the back end, they have a few more checks to make. But up front, it's not super complicated. You know, I think the misconception is, you know, he's bringing in guys and having them do things that they're not used to doing. You know, the ends, Alden, you see Alden stand up because that's what he does. But Alden can put his hand in the dirt if you want. He can stand up. D-Law can stand up. He can put his hand in the dirt. They have that freedom. So when you see guys mixing it up, that's freedom of choice, you know. And up front, it's not really a lot to it. And it's just all about execution. You know, in the back end, they have a few more checks to make. But I don't think it's the scheme that's overly complicated. I just think the guys just not getting it done. And they realize that, you know, and they going to do everything and they try to fix it.
Gerald McCoy, 10 years, 6 Pro Bowls. He's a free agent. And boy, there's a lot of good teams out there like Baltimore and Seattle that could use his skills. So they have not been a fast starting team. And you've been in this league long enough. Some team, like New England, you go to Foxborough, and that first 15 plays, man, they are humming every single week. And Kyle Shanahan, Sean McVay, there are certain coaches, you just first 12 plays work. Why do you think Dallas is struggling offensively? They're getting into these holes, which doesn't allow Zeke to get 22 carries because you're playing catch up. Why? What? You've been on a lot of played in this league for a long time. Why do you think Dallas struggles for the first quarter to quarter and a half?
Well, honestly, I'm not sure, because it's all about game plan. It's all about knowing what you see. Like if this was Tampa when I was there, or Carolina when I was there, I could answer that question honestly. But not being there to see what the offense is doing throughout the week, I don't know. I'm not sure. But what I do know is NFL one-on-one, it's hard to maximize a dominant running back when you fall behind. You know, people are saying, well, Zeke is not doing what we expect Zeke to do. Well, Zeke actually is doing what he's supposed to do. But when you fall behind, it's hard to give a guy like Zeke the ball over and over. You can't run the ball when you fall behind. You got to start passing. And Zeke is a ground and pound type running back. He wants those carries. Zeke wouldn't mind getting 30 plus carries a game. He wouldn't mind it because he loves to just grind defenses. But when you fall behind, you don't have that luxury, you know, and they just got to do a better job of starting fast.
By the way, he has a torn right quad. I assume torn right quad. So before we get on to my Buccaneers question, are you officially out for the year? Could you come back late in the playoffs, or where are you at with your recovery?
Yeah, I'm out for the season. I'm 7 weeks out as far as from my surgery. It's 7 weeks on Tuesday. But I'm ahead of schedule. I'm doing great, but it's no rush.
Okay.
You know, the doctors already said I'm out for the season, so what's the point of rushing back, man? Come back as healthy as I can be and be the best me I can. But it's going to take some time, but I'm willing to do it. I go to rehab 5 days a week.
Wow.
I start roughly 8:30, 9 o'clock, and I'm leaving around 2 o'clock. So I'm all day, every day. This is what I do, and then I come home and do more stuff. it's all grind with me.
Gerald McCoy joining us. So you played in Tampa for 9 years. You know this organization. You really know the personnel. And we were saying before the season started, Gerald, that I think Todd Bowles is the best coordinator currently in the NFL. I think he's the best one. And I think their defense at the end of last year really, really played well, especially in the front seven. So I don't think it's a Brady story as much as it is a defensive story to this point. They shut the Chargers down in the second half. Are you surprised at all? Every week they look a little better. You're probably not surprised by their quick turnaround this year, I would imagine.
No, I'm not surprised by the defense because the offense was what people hyped up because of all the weapons they have. And obviously you have Tom Brady who's coming in, who we don't even have to talk about what he's been to this league. But the defense, with how they were able to finish the season last season, they were already established. So this team was going to be carried by the defense to start the season. And once the offense started to develop, as you've seen on Sunday, they developed even more with Tom, you know, throwing 5 touchdowns. It's going to do nothing but get better. And I just have to say this. I would be remiss if I didn't say this. And anybody who knows me and knows my love for this particular player knows I have to say this. Lavonte David, okay? He was the player of the month, the defensive player of the month. And I think he is the most underrated linebacker we've ever had in this league. He doesn't get the accolades, but he has all the numbers. Go look at his TFLs. Lavonte David is second or third over the past 5 or 6 years or something like that. And he's in the conversation with J.J. Watt and Aaron Donald. This is Lavonte David we're talking about.
Yeah.
You look at his takeaways. You look at his tackles. He's not getting the all-pro votes, the Pro Bowl votes, but he's just as good as all of these guys. And if you ask around the league and bring up his name to any linebacker room, to any defense, and you say Lavonte David, they're going to say this exact same thing. So I'm so happy that the Bucs are on center stage and everybody is going to get to see. And the Bucs getting all the pub they've been getting over the first 4 weeks of the season, first 4 weeks, he's already player of the month. That should let you know what he's been doing. This is not new. This is who Lavonte has always been. And I personally think he's the best linebacker in football. This is me. And I believe that he's been playing at that level for a number of years, and it's going to do nothing but continue. I think he's very underrated. And if you just go look at the numbers, if you don't believe me, just go look at the numbers. And then the next game they play, you got tomorrow. Just watch the game and see if Lavonte David jumps off the screen. Just do that, and then you tell me I'm wrong after that.
Now, you don't have to convince me. We talked about him in preseason. He is a complete baller. I will say one thing that surprised me. Cam Newton goes to New England, and it has been great. I think they would have beaten Kansas City Monday with Cam Newton. I am shocked how seamless it's been, how engaged he is. I think they're a nightmare. If they could get a vertical threat offensively, I would. If I was Kansas City, I'd have no interest playing Cam Newton in New England again at all. I think they're – are you surprised at all how seamless – he didn't even have a preseason. He didn't have OTAs. He got there late. Are you surprised how effective it's been?
Me personally, I'm not. I played against Cam from the time he stepped in the league twice a year. And if you really pay attention to Cam Newton's career, over the last 3 years, the struggles have come from injury. Cam has been hurt. People are not paying attention to that. He's had shoulder surgeries. He's had shoulder issues. And last year, he just so happened to have a season-ending injury early in the season. So because he's had injuries, people said his play has dropped. Well, a healthy Cam Newton, which he was, he tried to tell everybody he was healthy, is hell to deal with. And the thing that people don't understand about Cam is leadership cannot be measured. You can look at it, you say, oh, he's a leader, or the media say, well, this guy's the captain. Well, this guy's a leader. No, no. Leadership is very hard to measure. And Cam's leadership ability, his energy, Cam brings an energy that is unmatched. And the glue that Cam is what's holding this team together. And I think it showed on Monday. His presence not being around, they just didn't have the same type of energy. It just wasn't the same. Something felt different.
That's right.
Just his presence around that team is changing them. And I'm excited to see moving forward, because I agree with you. I believe if Cam had played, they would have won that game.
Yeah, I think he's going to get an extension. I thought he was a rental player for a year. I watched Monday, and I'm like, nope, he's going to get an extension. New England's too good to get a top 10 pick. I would sign him today to an extension for the next couple of years if I was the New England Patriots. I think he should.
I think he deserves it, and I believe it would be the right move.
Yeah. Hey, it's great seeing you. Out for the year, torn right quad. He'll be back soon enough, and there's a lot of teams out there, I think, that could give Gerald McCoy a look, buddy. I appreciate you coming on the show.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you. And as you can tell, I've been in a horrible mood. I'm not happy at all, miserable, sitting back, watching football. I'm not smiling at all. Just everybody was wondering if I was sitting back miserable. Yeah, really miserable right now.
You look like a happy guy to me, man. Gerald McCoy.
Yes, sir.
All right, thanks, buddy. Chris Collins, we're around the corner. First, though, Joy Taylor with the news.
No.
Turn on the news.
This is the Herdline News.
The Athletic put together their choices for the best NFL rookies at each position based off their performances through the first quarter of the season.
Oh, this is good. The Athletic. Okay, that's the subscription-based newspaper thing. Yeah.
Yes. Justin Herbert beat out Joe Burrow as the best quarterback.
Okay.
Jaguars' James Robinson edged out Clyde Edwards-Helaire for the top running back spot.
CeeDee
Lamb leads all rookie wide receivers as a member of the best passing offense in the league. And Chase Young is ranked as a top edge rusher, leading all the rookies with 2.5 sacks despite missing a game. He is not going through position drills today at practice. He's doing work on a side field, so that's the update on Chase Young at this point. But
I'll tell you, that Patriot kid, Michael Onwenu, he is and again, I don't watch offensive linemen much, but in the games I've watched, he is really good. And so is Winfield, the safety for Tampa Bay.
Yeah, he's on there too.
He
and,
is a
Tristan Wirfs.
Tristan Wirfs. So Tampa's got two of them. Tampa, you know, it's funny. When I cover Tampa, they've always had players. They've always had good GMs. It's like, this is an organization that's had players. They've had great coaches. They're the only organization in NFL history. They've never had like an elite quarterback. They've had everything else. When they came out in the 70s, they had the Selman brothers, Leroy Selman, one of the classiest guys ever, one of the great defensive players, Warren Sapp, Darren Brooks. It was never a talent thing. It's never been a talent thing.
You know, I'm not going to lie. When you said preseason, Tampa could win the Super Bowl, I did think you sounded a little crazy.
I know.
Sometimes I bite my tongue with you.
Yeah, I know. That so does America.
But
they look pretty good.
They look pretty good.
They do. They're getting better.
Super Bowl good, but they look pretty good. And I'm very interested to see how they play tomorrow against the Bears. So things got heated yesterday with the Braves and Marlins in Game 1 of the NLDS. Ronald Acuna Jr. started things off by flipping his bat after his leadoff run in the first inning. Then in his next at-bat, he got hit by a pitch and exchanged words with Marlins pitcher Sandy Alcantara on his way to first, and then the Braves won the game 9-5, but Acuña still got some shots in afterwards. I flip a bat. I don't care. I don't have a problem with you flipping
a
bat.
Why would I put him on base? Like, the point is, so you hit a homer off me, you flip a bat. Now I'm going to put you on base. Like, this is the playoffs. It's like used to be in hockey. You can fight in the regular season, but once you get to the playoff hockey, you can't have goons getting into fights because then you're at a deficit. You can't do...
Can't wait for the day when flipping a bat is no longer a problem.
It's so dumb. It's so...
Like, everyone's not going to do it just because you're allowed to flip a bat. So, just... get there? It's like it's like a few years ago when the NFL was penalizing the celebrations. It's like, just because you make celebrations okay doesn't mean everyone's going to celebrate. You know, you're still going to have guys who just walk over and hand the ball, who aren't interested in dancing, who aren't interested in bringing the whole team down. Sometimes they just want to give it to the offensive lineman so he can do a shimmy. It's okay. It's going to be okay.
There's a certain rigidity to baseball that wears me out. It's like, it's okay. It's a bad play. I figure this. One of the hardest things to do in sports is hit a baseball. And then to hit it over a wall, you don't get a second of, I'm the man.
No.
Like, you don't get a second and a half. In the NFL.
Supposed to hit it. Just delicately.
Like, if you ever had
it on the ground.
If you ever had an emotional moment in your life that you can't. I remember when my daughter was born. My first child. I mean, I was like out of myself. Like, there was like 2 minutes where I was literally like, I was out of myself. I couldn't control my emotions. Like, crying, I couldn't control it. I'm like, I'm crying, I'm in a room. There's like, if I scored a touchdown in the NFL and I beat a Pro Bowl corner, these are 24-year-old kids. You cannot expect them to not be like a little out of themselves.
Actually, fans at home or in the stands when they're there actually react more excited and more emotional than the players are allowed to. But Marlins and Braves are playing game 2 right now. Game 3 will be in tomorrow, 1 Eastern on FS1. Dodgers Padres tonight at 8:30 Eastern on FS1. That was another good game yesterday.
Yeah.
So it's NLDS game 2.
Cool.
And the Dodgers beat the Padres 5-1. Good night for LA sports. Finally, Russell Westbrook showed his appreciation for the housekeeping staff in the bubble as he left Orlando. Westbrook confirmed he left a generous tip for the staff at the Grand Floridian Hotel.
Generous is putting it mildly.
Yes. He told Taylor Rooks of Bleacher Report that the housekeeping staff took great care of the team and did their job at a high level, so he felt like leaving a tip was the right thing to do. He wouldn't comment on the amount that he left, but it was reported it was $8,000. He also reportedly left his room virtually spotless. This is a very cool thing to do. And we've been talking about, you know, the players and the coaches, obviously, and the reporters. But there are whole staffs of people that are also in the bubble. I was watching something on Twitter yesterday about the chefs. Remember, the food was a big complaint at the beginning of the bubble. The NBA brought in professional top-level chefs to cook all the meals for all the players and the staff. They can't leave their hotel.
That's
so
right.
They're quarantined within their hotel. They're just working every day, all day, making food for the players, the coaches and staff, and reporters for that matter, that are in the bubble. So there are a lot of people who are quarantined in there making all this happen and work. Congratulations to the WNBA on another successful bubble. Hockey just finished theirs. And the NBA is about a week away from finishing theirs.
And
really remarkable.
And Russell Westbrook, tip of the cap. That's great.
Yeah. I mean, Russ is a great guy. He does a lot of great things for the community and away from the court. But this was a nice thing to do.
Joy with the news.
Well, that's the news.
And thanks for stopping by.
The Herdline News.
Chris Collinsworth, the great broadcaster on Sunday Night Football with Al Michaels. He'll be joining us next. He saw Carson Wentz, the guy I love, up close and personal. I love Carson Wentz, and I think he gets a lot of heat, but he gutted out a road win, and he saw him up close and personal. Chris Collinsworth next.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
I'm old enough to remember when Chris Collinsworth was a really fast, skinny kid who played wide receiver at Florida. Then he got drafted by Cincinnati and was one of the fastest guys in the league forever. And now he's a star, 16 Emmys, NBC Sports, Sunday Nights with Al Michaels, owner of Pro Football Focus, which is, we rely on it all the time. They make me watch guards in the NFL. That's an achievement, folks. Chris Collinsworth is now joining us live. First of all, congrats on all your success. And this week you got Russell Wilson, who I think is insane.
Yeah.
And he made my sister like football. She lives up in Seattle. when you watch the film of him, as you are doing right now, why does he make everybody work? Will Disley was a blocking tight end at Washington. He was a defensive end when he got to Seattle. And then all of a sudden they draft him and he catches passes. What is the gift that Russell Wilson has to elevate undrafted, gadget guy, project guy? What is it?
Time. Man, he buys time back there. He just moves around and makes defensive linemen and linebackers chasing him look bad. Now, it's interesting what they're started doing here lately is starting to blitz some cornerbacks so you can get athlete on athlete to try and bring him down. But as he's moving around and buying time, and the other thing, Colin, I love, as a matter of fact, you'll hear me talk about it some this week during the game, the more I've been watching him, you know how like he gets like 10, 11, 12 yards deep sometimes in his drop. And so when they're starting to come after him, he'll take off and sort of run towards the line of scrimmage. Now, if you're a linebacker or a strong safety, whatever, now you got to try and figure out, what are we going to do with this guy? Are we going to come up and try and make the tackle on him? Or are we going to try and just stay back in coverage? And no matter what you do, you're wrong. But it's so amazing to watch him. He looks like a shortstop getting it and throwing it across the diamond to first base. Of course, he played second base. So all those weird angle throws, he's just really something. But I think the thing that he does best is a deep ball. He puts so much arc on those deep balls. And you think about a guy like Metcalf going down the field, and now the defensive back's 5'10" and comes up to about his shoulder, and now he raises his arm up there, and that ball's coming in at that kind of trajectory. I don't know how do you stop it. I really don't.
I was rooting for Carson Wentz Sunday. I like him a lot. I think he's got mental fatigue. They've lost receivers for three straight years. Philadelphia's tough on its quarterbacks. He's lost Frank Reich. I still believe in him. Has there been a moment in the last year or two that maybe you didn't, that something that you were worried that it wasn't working?
I think mentally you got to keep your eye on people who are playing without their team intact. I mean, you look at that offense. I've never seen anything like it. I'd never seen the entire receiving corps, minimum the first three, arguably the top four receivers on that team, gone. Three of the starting offensive linemen in the game were gone. Then Lane Johnson got hurt during the game. I mean, you're talking about 8 of the 10 teammates that he thought he was going to have going into the season not being out there and not being ready to play. I thought in many ways Carson took the game over.
Yeah.
I mean, he was out scrambling and he was running. That's what he did against the Bengals. And everybody said, you know, the Bengals, oh, they tied the Bengals. That's horrendous. The tie against the Bengals now has them in first place. So I've seen Carson Wentz make way too many plays to write him off at such a young age. Now, do I think that's possible between his knee and his back injury, you know, that he's not quite physically where he was when he came in? Maybe. I don't know. But I see him make too many great plays still to ever think that once this team gets back together that maybe they truly are. I just assumed the Cowboys were going to be the best team in this division this year. But here the Eagles are sitting on top, so who knows?
I said I thought Joe Burrow was going to be Tony Romo. He played like Romo. He looked like Romo. Both have good arms, not special. Burrow's better than I thought. I'm wrong. I think he's doing it with a below suboptimal offensive line. You live in Cincinnati. You know people on that staff. Are even they a tad surprised how good Burrow's been so far?
I don't think so. I don't think so at all. Mike Brown believes that you have a quarterback and a chance, or you don't and you don't. In the 80s, we had two MVP quarterbacks in Kenny Anderson and Boomer Esiason. We went to two Super Bowls. And I think he thinks that's the magic formula. So when all these ridiculous offers were pouring in for Joe Burrow, Mike Brown said, no, baby, no. I know how I've got a chance to try and get back to another Super Bowl again. I think I've got a potential MVP in my pocket, and I'm going to play him. You know, the interesting thing about him is in college, he was known as the deep ball passer, one of the most accurate deep ball throwers going in the game. He hasn't even gotten that part of his game going yet.
Yeah.
So he's been magical. Top 10 quarterback in the 20 yards and less category. But we have not seen him really begin to hit some of those deep balls the way that he did at LSU. So I really look for him to get better. I think we're looking at the tip of the iceberg.
Yeah, well, their offensive line has to get better, too, to throw those deep balls. So I actually have no problem with fewer deep balls right now. Aaron Rodgers is flourishing post-Mike McCarthy. You look at the film. Is it more multiple? Are there more variables? Is some of his success, the schemes are better? I mean, how do you explain it? I think his offensive line, the protection right now is real good, but what do you explain for his phenomenal last, 10, 12 games?
Well, and especially when you consider without Adams, without Lazard, that, he's just making it up on the fly now. One thing, it was interesting, and I forgot to ask him about it. I should have asked him when we did the game against the Saints. Was exactly what was different. He was saying that he had gone back and looked at himself and what was different. My opinion of what was different over the last couple of years is the fact that he was not holding the ball as long. He had gotten to the point where every play was a little like Russell Wilson, where he wanted to get up and step up and through and buy time and create space and all that kind of stuff. But I think now he's got the double-edged sword going here. Now, not only is he still creative with those plays where he's buying time and stepping up and through, he's gotten back to what he once was, which is let's get rid of the ball at least 50% of the time in 2.5 seconds or less, which is sort of the dead in the middle, right? So let's get back, boom, and then get back, boom, and get back, boom. And now all of a sudden the pass rushers, you think about it from their standpoint. If they know you're going to scramble and try and step up and through, what are they doing? They're going, they're peeking, they're doing their fancy moves because they might have 4 seconds to rush the passer. You start throwing it in under 2.5 seconds, you turn everybody into a bull rusher. They have no choice. They got to go try and go right down the middle of those offensive linemen. So the blocks get easier, the passes get easier. Now when you start to scramble and move, it's something unique. It's something different. It's another creative edge that he has. And the other part of it is that with nobody in the stands, this guy's the smartest guy playing quarterback in the league. I mean, every time we meet with him, he absolutely blows me away with his memory, he can recall sequences. We can call out a game from 2013. You remember in the third quarter, and we've already looked it up, right? Al's already looked it up. We've gone through the sequence, and he goes, oh, yeah, we started with that little slant, and then we hit the hitch and go on the sideline. It blows you away. So now when you get in the stadium and there's nobody there, and he can communicate, and he goes, hut, hut, and these guys jump off sides, and the safety comes down to this side, and that linebacker starts to fall off, and he goes, ha, I know what it is. All right, Lazard, go ahead and run a slant for me right here, and boom, they can hit it. The smarter guys, the guys that know their offense inside and out, the guys that know how to communicate at the line of scrimmage, they're gaining a huge advantage. So I think in this year, we're seeing the great quarterbacks separate even a little bit more.
Owner of Pro Football Focus, 16 sports Emmys. I only got about a minute left. Did you major in broadcasting in Florida?
No, I majored in accounting. How boring is that? Then I got my law degree. And so that's it.
Wow, you got your law degree. Never practiced, though, right? You got your law degree in Florida?
At the University of Cincinnati. It took me 5 years, and the number one thing I learned in law school was that I didn't want to be a lawyer.
That's funny. You're not the first guy to say that, though, I bet. That's no fun compared to what you're doing now. He's got a podcast with All-Pro Richard Sherman. They've teamed up weekly podcasts. Second one's coming up, iTunes, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. Say hi to Al. Absolute pleasure. We'll be watching Sunday night, Chris.
Good talking to you, pal.
All right, Chris Collinsworth. Yeah, I remember at Florida, he was so fast. Chris was such a burner. He was this gangly, long wideout, and he shows up, and he was like a track guy. Chris Collinsworth was one of the fastest guys in the league, I swear to God, when he played. He must be a track guy. I have to go look it up. He was so fast. And his career was only 7 or 8 years with Cincinnati, all with Cincinnati, got to a Super Bowl, and then all of a sudden, boom, he was doing, he's one of those guys that worked his way up. I mean, that guy worked every assignment. I think he did. He was like a third guy in a booth and a two guy in a booth and on the number three team, number two team, and then, boom, last 15 years, he's been a total rock star. And Pro Football Focus is great. Check it out. His podcast, Pro Football Focus, they're both great. Check engine light comes on, don't freak out. Go to carshield.com. That's what they do. A deductible may apply. Warranties when your warranty runs out. We're off tomorrow, but we are back Friday. So tomorrow, Joy and I, she'll be doing yoga. I will be, my daughter's in town, so I'll be hanging out with her.
Oh, nice.
I'm going to go big lunch and do stuff and naps and stuff. It's going to be a big day. Big day. So thanks, everybody, for joining us. Want to thank Nick Wright, Joel Klatt, Tristan Thompson, Gerald McCoy, and Chris Collinsworth. Nice job by Dave, our guest burger today. We were packed, and we will see you Friday live in L.A. It's The Herd.